You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
That stadium is going to be rocking, and heaven help whoever walks in there to play us.
Sustained effort and violence, you play your ass off.
You're watching the Pirate Preview on the Sports Objective. Join us every Tuesday night on YouTube Live as we're joined by beat writers and other media members. We take a look at what lies ahead for the Pirates. Now, here are the guys.
It is a first down. Pirates.
Welcome in to the Pirate Preview here on the Sports Objective. Glad to be with you tonight as we got a big game on Saturday at 4 o'clock on ESPNU. And that's East Carolina hosting Marshall. Very special game for obvious reasons. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Dave. Hope you are.
I am. Matt Semenza, who, of course, played the linebacker, middle linebacker for the Pirates in the Logan era. Man, how are you?
What's up, guys? Just always excited to have the opportunity to play Marshall. This is always a fun game. It's a great rivalry. It's a great matchup. It's a team that, you know, I know we have a lot of respect for, and it seems like every time these two teams meet on the field, it's going to overtime or it's coming down to the wire in some way. So looking forward to catching up with Keith tonight.
Bubba, what a special guest. He's been with us really all the way close to the beginning. I believe 2019 was the first time we had him on, but glad to have him back. One of our favorites.
Yeah, been on the show several times, but yeah, glad to have him back once again. Even though it's been a while, and Keith, welcome back.
Thank you, Bubba. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Matt. Glad to be here. I, as you know, have a soft spot in my heart for Greenville and ECU and all the nice things that people have done over the years down there. And so, looking forward to the visit on Saturday. And like you guys mentioned, it's I don't know if rivalry is the right word because they don't play every year, but man, when they do, there's a lot of passion and certainly a lot of respect for each other's programs. And I like that. You know, it's not name calling. It's not, you know, normal kind of, you know, rivals that are kind of hate each other. This is a different kind of game. And I like that they play. I think it's fantastic.
In fact, we saw just right before we started the show in the green room, I was telling you, I just checked. It's in 2 years. I couldn't remember like you. But it's September 25. We come back to Huntington and looking forward to maybe Bubba, we can all go up there like we tried to a couple of years ago. I know it fell through for us, but that's definitely on my bucket list for obvious reasons. Great movie, We Are Marshall. If you don't know what we're talking about, I know, Keith, you did an excellent documentary. How long is it? That's been a few years ago, right?
2020.
Yeah, that was 2020 on the 50th anniversary of the tragedy. And thank you. Really met, you know, some great people down there putting that together. You know, Richard Peeler and Rusty Scales and Jim Creech, guys who had played in that game in 1970 for East Carolina, a story which we kind of had never told. And they, you know, they were so giving of their time and their memories of that game and how it even affects them to this day. So that was just part of what I wanted to do, but that was the COVID year. But thank you. It was very, I don't know, fulfilling is the right word, but it was just a project that really I wanted to be a part of, and our people here let us go where we needed to go. And we had a great visit in Greenville and loved having the opportunity to tell that side of the story from ECU's perspective too.
Keith, I don't know if you'll know the answer to this. This is Kyle, by the way, joining the show a few minutes late, but this is probably a better question for East Carolina Athletic Director John Gilbert. But have you heard anything up there about the 2020 game never got played? Have you heard anything about that being rescheduled for Greenville? I would think, you know, I don't know what our schedules look like for 2030 for each school, but I think playing it on the 60th anniversary would make a lot of sense.
Oh, I agree with you, Kyle. I have not. I will ask Christian Spears, Marshall's AD, about that. You know how scheduling goes and, you know, when you're out of conference and you're looking at future dates. But, I know that the people up here have great respect for the program. I know the folks down there do as well. And, you know, why not play it? They're two similar programs that love their football. And I just think, you know, we obviously can't see this game every year because of conferences and that kind of thing. But, man, as much as you can play it or if you can play it every 3 or 4 years, I think that's great. And I think people appreciate it. I think they really do.
Yeah, and hold the phone to that conference thing and not seeing it every year. By 2030, it might be, we might be in the same league again.
It could change next week, the way things are going, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Keith, you take a look at this matchup and this series. I think this will be the 17th meeting between the Pirates and Thundering Herd, the 8th in Greenville. Marshall, you know, surprisingly, on one hand, you know, has never won in Greenville, 0-7. But there definitely have been plenty of thrillers. I think at least 3 or 4 of those games in Greenville have kind of come down to the wire. And you take a look in the most recent game, which is hard to believe that it's been since 2012 that these programs have met in Greenville. That one was one for the ages, 65-59.
Yeah, I remember that one going into overtime and thinking this is nuts. And two great offenses, of course, that day. The defense is probably would like to have a redo on those. But I started coming down. I came in I believe in 06 when they, you know, the movie was coming out and they dedicated that beautiful plaque there on the visitor side of the stadium. And I have been to each game since that has been in Greenville, and of course the ones in Huntington, and you know, seeing Chris Johnson play. And I remember him up here turning the corner against Marshall, and I'm thinking to myself, and I watched Randy Moss play, and I said, man, that's about the fastest cat I've ever seen in this stadium. I mean, he was so fast. And then come to find out what he did at the combine, and then later in the NFL. So it's got, you know, great players, great history. You know, the thing I always tell people, you know, with the history of the program and the tragedy is that's the same stadium. The footprint is still exactly the same. Now, obviously, the improvements at Dowdy Ficklin are unbelievable. To me, it's like a mini SEC atmosphere. And asked some of the Marshall players about that today. And one of the guys, Trent Holler, used to play at ECU, and now he starts on the offensive line for Marshall. And he said he had told some of the Marshall players that haven't been down there what to expect. But, yeah, that you know, the improvements to the stadium are obvious, and it's a tremendous atmosphere. But that same stadium sits in exactly the same spot where, you know, Marshall and ECU battled in 1970. So there's a lot of symmetry to this series, and really looking forward to watching it. I just think it always lives up to the hype.
Keith, in present day, as we look at things, and again, I joined late, so forgive me if this has already been talked about. But the Albany game this past weekend, I watched a lot of that on ESPN+. You know, Ollie looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. What I got from Marshall out of that ball game is they had a very basic game plan. They wanted to run tempo, and they wanted to run Ali. I don't think they really showed a lot of their offense against Albany. It almost cost them. They were able to get by with it. But would you concur with that? Were they hiding a lot?
I think so. They wouldn't tell you that openly, right, Kyle? But, you know, they do have a really good quarterback. That Albany quarterback was a real deal, Reese Poffenbarger. He could run and he can throw, and they knew that going into the week. But
that would be my game plan right now. Mason Garcia and Flynn can both run. I'd be doing a lot of zone read against you guys.
Yeah, I mean he got out the gate there a couple of times, and he's effective throwing the ball on the run. But you know, in that game, it was kind of weird. The first play from scrimmage, Rasheen Ali went 73 yards. One of the receivers got a holding call after Ali was 10 yards past him. So that would have made it 7-0 from the get-go, and who knows what kind of momentum that changes. But, you know, they go to halftime down 3-0, and at one point they're down 17-7 in the third quarter, and the fans were getting restless. And then they did start running some tempo and quickening the pace a little bit, which I think they probably thought they wouldn't have to do. But it worked, and they got the win. And as Coach Huff said today, they're, you know, half the teams in college football would like to be 1-0 right now. So he's not going to apologize for the loss, but he did say they needed to work on a lot before they head down to play the Pirates for sure.
That's something last night on Inside ECU Athletics, you know, which is the name of Mike Houston's weekly weekly show at Tiebreaker Sports Bar there in Greenville. And Coach Houston certainly thought that that the Herd was definitely holding some things back, kind of alluding to what Kyle was saying.
Yeah, and you know what, Bubba, they have, and Coach Huff has reminded us of this throughout preseason camp and after the game. They've got 40 new players on the roster, so some of that is seeing who meshes where and, you know, making sure everybody's in the right spots, and that's part of the growing pains when you have new players and the transfer portal and So, you know, some of that's to be expected. But again, he understands if they have that same kind of effort Saturday, they will not come out of there with a win. So I think that players, even one of them even admitted today that they overlooked Albany a little bit. So, you know, when you do that, it's a little different than going up to the big house and you got to play Michigan on game one, as opposed to having Albany in your house. So yeah, those are two different sets of circumstances. And so we'll see. It's always fun to see what happens from week one to week two. And we'll see with that on Saturday.
I think that's why I found the line so fascinating in this game, because I think you have two teams when you really look here who I think both teams underperformed last week. I think both teams were, you know, pretty vanilla on offense and we're probably holding things back, which always surprises me when coaches do that. But I think that's fair to say here. But, you know, I was very surprised. You know, initially it was a pick 'em game, and now the line has shifted to Marshall -3. So I don't know how you, Keith, what were your thoughts on that when you saw that?
I saw that Sunday, and I remarked to one of my family members, I said, Marshall's favored by 1.5. That did surprise me. A couple of reasons, and history, you know, that coaches say it never matters, but they haven't won down there. East Carolina did play Michigan. The defense obviously held Blake Corum and that running attack, you know, below its expectations. And the fact that Marshall kind of struggled, you know, that did surprise me. And I'm, you know, those guys are normally close or dead on, but we'll see on Saturday. I got a feeling, maybe I'm wrong, that it'll be somewhat of a defensive battle, but we'll see. That did shock me too a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be close either way. I mean, I thought for sure I could have seen a pick 'em game or just -1 either way. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very interesting.
Matt, it did open as a pick 'em. It went to -1.5 in Marshall's favor really fast. Briefly went to -1 East Carolina. Then it stabilized at -3 Marshall, if you go look at the line history. But I'm curious what the reaction is up there to the quarterback play. Your quarterback started basically the second half, or at least the last third of your season last year. He came out and played against Albany. You got the transfer from Rice also, if I remember right. Daniels came in down there. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on your quarterback's name right now.
Cam Fancher. Yeah.
Is he solidified as the starter, or is he still up for debate?
I mean, Coach Huff raved about him, you know, in the preseason camp, said he's matured and you know, has a better command of the offense. You know, he did throw for 268 yards, I think, which kind of was a quiet 268. Right. He has been 5-1 of the starter, and I think that's what Coach Huff is talking about. You know, he did what he had to last year. They won their last five games, and I think sometimes, you know, the old saying, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. But Marshall fans are a little uneasy about the way things were going on offense, so I don't know how this will all progress. I do know Fancher got better as the year went on. But, you know, we'll see if they can, you know, find some downfield throws that they didn't have against Albany. He's very mobile. He can run it, too, and he didn't do a whole lot of that on Saturday. So, what they call it, Overreaction Monday on Saturday after college football. Everybody's got their – you know, I was thinking about last year when Marshall went out and beat Notre Dame, right, game two of the season, and everybody's got them winning the Sun Belt. Next week they lost to Bowling Green, and everybody says, you know, they're going to have a losing season. So, you know how football is. It's crazy, but we'll see which team shows up for both squads on Saturday. But I never put too much stock in one game or one win or one loss.
No, I agree with you. I initially had that reaction watching the game against Albany. Said, well, maybe Marshall's not going to be as good as expected. I have you guys winning the Sun Belt East. I know what your defense was last year. I know what Ali is, and now Ali's back. And I think what Coach Huff may be trying to say with your quarterback is, without saying it, because he wants to score as many points, with the defense and running game you guys have, if you got a game manager that doesn't turn the ball over, you guys are going to win a lot of football games. But I looked at that Albany game, and my initial was, you know, I had a knee-jerk reaction to maybe Marshall's not as good. Then I immediately thought back to 2021. We had just beaten you guys, and then we had Tulane in 2 weeks. And in between that, we played Charleston Southern. Mm-hmm. And we barely beat Charleston Southern after coming back from 17 down to beat you guys in the fourth. and then came back the following week and beat Tulane by 21. So sometimes those FCS games, you can't take much stock into them.
Yeah, you know, I heard Shedeur Sanders, you know, Deion's son, after the big win they had against TCU the other day at Colorado, he basically, you know, in front of the media said there's not a whole lot of difference between FCS and FBS. That, you know, the skill talent is still pretty good. The depth on the lines of scrimmage is a little bit different. But, you know, it's just the truth. If you know how football is, if you don't get everybody, you know, rowing in the same direction, I don't care who you're playing, you got a chance to get beat. And especially if your players in the back of their minds aren't 100% fully committed. And that's, I think, the nature of playing a team like that, as opposed to you guys going to Michigan and playing in the big house. So, yeah, I mean, all that matters. Kids are kids. They're 18, 19, 20 years old. They read the papers. They watch TV. They see what's going on with everybody saying, oh, it's going to be a blowout. And sometimes that translates to how they play. And that's just human nature, right or wrong. Coaches say, hey, block out all the outside noise. But that's sometimes impossible to do. So, you know, that's just part of the game, which makes every Saturday pretty interesting in this sport.
Keith, kind of along the lines of what you were referencing here just a few minutes ago, as far as the type of game this will be, you know, that game 2 years ago had 80 points. The over-under this week is 44.5, and I definitely I would not be shocked if we hit the under. I could see this being a 21-17 type of game.
See, 2009.
Yeah, I think you're right, Bubba. First of all, neither team has the quarterback they had, you know, 2 years ago yet. Anyway, Fancher may be, and your guy Garcia may be, and the backup. But Ehlers, of course, was all world for you guys for, 5 years? And Marshall had Grant Wells, a kid who's now at Virginia Tech, and he could fling it around too. So, yeah, I could absolutely see it being a defensive battle. And you know, that's fun too, because those are, you know, it's just like two heavyweights going at it and who can outlast whom. So I could certainly see a 21-17 score, and who knows who's on what side of it. But I agree with you, Bubba.
Yeah, I referenced 2009. What I meant was 2008 in Greenville. That game went to it was either overtime or double overtime, and I think it was 17-7 when it went to 17-17 when it went into overtime, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting. It really will. I mean, Michigan, your game, you scored 3, but that's Michigan, and Marshall scores what, 17 against Albany. We'll see if the offenses can get on track a little bit.
Game winner by Ben Hartman in that one.
Yeah, that's right. 08, Garrett, yep.
That's right.
Yeah, an overtime game winner. How many fans are you guys expecting to send down from Huntington? You guys normally have a good turnout in Greenville, you know, in the Sun Belt now. So you guys, your fans get to travel a lot more. So maybe not as anxious to get to Greenville as in years past when it was back in Conference USA. It was the only realistic road game. Now you guys have Boone, Norfolk, you know, Harrisonburg. Mm-hmm. So do you expect a good crowd from Marshall and Greenville?
You know, I think there'll be a pretty decent turnout. You know, one thing about a lot of Marshall alumni, they live down there. So you don't have to bring them all from Huntington. You know, there are a lot of alumni that live in the Southeast and live,
Isn't Charlotte the biggest alumni base for Marshall?
It's one of them. And I got 5 or 6 of friends that live down there, maybe more than that. I got family down there too. So, there are a lot of people down there in Carolina and beyond, you know, even in South Carolina and Georgia. And so I think there should be a good turnout. And I tell people all the time, and I really mean this, I feel like that having been in SEC stadiums, when that place gets rocking, it feels like a mini SEC atmosphere. And I say, if you get a chance to go down there, go. It's a great town and a great stadium, great atmosphere.
So we had a comment from some of our viewers, Johnny Gardner, as well as Johnny Robertson. We'll go to Johnny Gardner first. He just said during today's press conference and player interviews that Trent Holler's name definitely came up multiple times. And then he said this is always a good matchup, as we've referenced. And then Johnny Robertson said that against Albany, Marshall definitely used the bubble screen very effectively. And that Albany played very well, but missed too many tackles.
Yeah, both those Johnnies are right, guys. And to the first question, in fact, we asked Trent about the game 2 years ago, which, remember, Marshall was at, 38-21, I think, in the fourth quarter. And ECU ends up 42-38 with the win. And one of Marshall's other players, Owen Porter, he's one of their great defensive players. He said, "Yeah, Trent reminds us of that game all the time and laughs." So Trent, he was all ECU that game, and now he's all Marshall this game. So he'll have some mixed emotions. But yeah, I mean, everybody remembers that game 2 years ago. That was Coach Huff's first year, and I know. And if you get him to say it honestly, that he knows that they kind of kudos to ECU for the comeback. But remember, they didn't cover an onside kick, and there were couple of things that happened that maybe would have turned it their way. But I know that one, he still remembers in the back of his mind that game.
Yeah, Owen Daffer, the old dribble middle onside mm-hmm. kick recovered by the kicker.
That's hard to do. I don't care. You know how that football is shaped. If you could do that, you could probably make a lot of money on onside kicks because that was perfect.
I went from, in the span of about 10 minutes in that game, fellas, I went from wanting to fire – the AD, the whole coaching staff, bench the quarterback, fire the university president to give Mike Houston a raise in the span of that was one of the crazier endings I think I've ever seen.
It really was nuts.
Yeah,
Matt,
yeah.
You overreact and earn a game? No way.
You'd be surprised, right, Kyle? I mean, you know.
Shocking.
Yeah, you're allowed to do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just a little obsessive with it.
Yeah, I was going to say the only game I remember being a blowout was the 2013 game in Huntington where Marshall – it was Marshall's day. I remember
that was their game of the year too. They if I recall, they had a losing record that year.
And no, 2013, no, we were playing each other for the East Division.
Yeah.
Oh, that – okay. There was another game. It was – it would have been prior to that.
When you're Mark thinking Snyder of the 07. I think you're thinking of 07.
You guys beat us like 26-7.
Yeah, and that was
we were going up to win the East, and Marshall was not very good, and y'all just destroyed us.
That's the one. Yeah, yeah. It's funny how the games have gone, and like we said earlier, it's so many different ways to win and lose and different plots and subplots, but that's what makes it fun. You never really kind of know what you're going to get.
Four overtime games in the history of the series, the GMAC Bowl, 2008, 2011, and 2012. So I'm calling for it now. I'm calling for overtime this weekend.
So you all like this story. Byron Leftwich was back in town a couple of weeks ago with Chad Pennington, and they were at a fundraiser, and I was emceeing the event. And, of course, Byron was the quarterback against David Garrard that day at the GMAC Bowl. Still, to this day, the wildest football game I've ever seen in person.
I remember something about that.
Yeah, go on bad memories for Pirates fans, but it was 38-8 at halftime, and the way that thing ended, 64-61 double overtime, was crazy.
Steve Logan said that they'll put on his grave he scored 61 and he lost.
God bless him. They had that shot of him with his head in his hands, and I thought, oh man, get off that shot. That man does not need that.
And the crazy thing, we had Leonard Henry, who was averaging like
he was a monster,
8, 9, 10 yards a carry.
Quit throwing it.
Hey, I remember at halftime thinking, like, if the only way they could possibly get back in this is a couple of defensive scores. I didn't, of course, I wasn't, you know, omniscient and thinking they were going to do it, and they had two pick sixes, and really that's the only way they got back in. And if you just hand the ball off, there weren't enough possessions then to win that game and to come back if they just handed it off, you know. Oh, that was crazy.
Two pass happy.
Yeah.
And then I don't think one thing a lot of people forget about that game is in all the craziness, you guys would have beat us in regulation. You missed your extra point. That's the only reason it went to overtime.
And they had an equally difficult shot of Bob Pruitt after that missed extra point. He looked like he was going to shoot himself. You know, it was like, oh my God. So yeah, that thing was, and if I remember, heck, half the fans that were there for Marshall and Mobile went home. They went to, I don't know, to the Mardi Gras or whatever to enjoy the streets because they were done. They thought it was over. And then can you imagine leaving that game and then find out later on they won? And then you don't tell anybody you left. You just lie and say, oh, I was there, you know?
Yeah, they had that game. I remember being at my parents' house, and at halftime, my mom said, why are you staying up? They're up 30 points, 38-8. I said, Mom, I'm an East Carolina fan. I've seen some crazy things, so maybe it's my fault, but I really, that game, I was like, I can't believe that down 30 points and Marshall came back, you know?
Well, we had done that really the whole second half of the year, almost. We had almost blown the Cincinnati game and the TCU game. And I'm trying to remember one of those two games came down to a field goal that either TCU
Cincinnati.
Okay, they missed it at the end.
Yeah, because Cincinnati, it looked like it was going to split it, but it just came up a couple yards short.
Yeah, so that we almost done it against TCU and Cincy. We jumped up big on them, and then they came back, and then we did it one more time against Marshall, and it finally bit us.
One of the storylines for that year for 2001, I remember, guys, for that season for ECU, is we started out great, but it looked like our conditioning in the fourth quarter. You guys remember that? It looked like we gave out like every – even the games we won, we looked like we were not in good condition in 2001 for that season.
And that was the first year that Jeff Connors had moved on to the University of North Carolina, so there was that transition. So there very well could have been something to that.
Yeah,
that's back when they didn't pay strength and conditioning coaches what they do now. Now I think they realize their value, and so a lot of them make a lot of money now.
Yeah, yeah, that's an excellent point. It would be obviously, you know, at this point, but it makes no difference. But it would have been interesting to see how that that season, if it would have been 6-6, had Coach Connors been in the fold.
No, well, I can go ahead and tell you right now, Bubba. No,
I think we would have probably won at least 8 or 9.
I agree with you 100%. And you know, Jeff Connors and Matt can tell you all about Jeff Connors. He was a hell of a strength and conditioning coach. Particularly under the Logan day, and he did a good job in a rough. And I don't like the way things ended with Jeff Connors and Ruffin McNeil, but Connors did way more good at ECU than he ever did bad.
No question. So I know you're coming down on Saturday. Are you doing it? Are you doing any stories about Greenville or ECU this time?
I don't know if I'll have time, Dave, because we're gonna because of our high school schedule on Friday. I'm gonna just get up early with my guy, and we're gonna head down in the morning. So I won't have enough time. And the way the game is situated, what we're gonna do is send back first half highlights for our 6 o'clock sports, which will be about halftime, you know, 5:30 or so, and then do some post game and send that back for the 10 and the 11. So it'll be a quick turnaround, but I will enjoy all of Greenville that it has to offer in the little bit of time I'm there for sure.
No doubt. We're looking forward to it. I tell you what, we need to do whatever we can to extend the series because after, like Kyle said, we have the game in 25 at Huntington. Maybe we play that game. We've got plenty, by the way, I checked. I thought I was right, but 25, 26, there's a whole bunch of openings that we have available. So I don't know about the Marshall side of things, but East Carolina has holes, shall we say, and it's not easy.
I thought we were pretty full until 28.
No, we've got a hole in 25, 26. But it's unfortunately.
Dave, you mean to tell me, Dave, that none of these P5 teams from North Carolina will play little old ECU?
No, Matt, they won't play us anymore, and it's going to take legislation to make that happen, and we're just not ready to do that at this time. So we're just going to cower down to them and say it's okay.
Yeah, 25.
How about Virginia Tech, Kyle? Will they play us?
Virginia Tech. Well, you know what? They might. They got. I don't think that AD's still there now. Or maybe he is. But let me tell for everybody.
Yeah, pretty sure Whit Babcock is still there.
Well, he's horrible. He's friggin' horrible. look at the state of their football program, and just keep on enjoying playing Old Dominion instead of us. That's fine.
Hey guys, they come to Huntington this year. Up on the sarcasm 2 weeks after there. This. Yeah, I got it. It's easy to see. Tech actually comes to Huntington in two weeks after Saturday. And
I wish it was next weekend. That way maybe you'd be looking ahead.
Yeah. The plot twist is Tech's starting quarterback is Grant Wells, who, of course, was at Marshall you got 2 years ago. So there's a whole lot of side stories going on with that one, too.
Yeah, that's
go herd in that one.
Yeah, pulling
but hard. You guys gotta promise that you just make it up in 2025. Just put it down in your phone, a little reminder.
I'll tell you what, Keith, Jesus Christ, I couldn't get your name out. I'll tell you what, Keith, this is what you do. All right, talk to Coach Huff.
I got
y'all.
You.
Go ahead. You go ahead. Don't worry about this game this weekend. Just play. Play vanilla like you did against Auburn, and save everything for Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech.
Yeah, let me tell you something. That one right there, if you beat the Hokies in Huntington, what you do in Greenville ain't going to matter. And I say that with all kidding, but it's the truth, too. If you beat Hokies in Huntington, it won't matter what it's in Greenville.
Virginia Tech, we had a rivalry, but it was friendly. It was nothing there. But after what went down in 2018, it's become like – and now that they won't – they took every game off the schedule we had with them.
Well, you had two idiots, Dave. You had Whit Babcock. We had three idiots. Well, you had two idiots. Confer was gone by that point, I guess. But you had two idiots. You had Whit Babcock, and you had Cecil Staton, our chancellor at the time. And so you had two idiots making decisions. And
sue me
exactly is what our genius chancellor Cecil Staton told Whit Babcock when we canceled the game. And truth be told, the reason we canceled that game. They can use the Hurricanes as an excuse, but the truth be told, because Scotty Montgomery sucked, and he wanted to get out of the game, and Cecil Staton let him. But, you know, it is what it is. But Whit Babcock shouldn't have punished the whole university and athletic department and used that as a reason to quit playing East Carolina. But anyway, that's not your fault, Keith.
It makes too much sense. So I'm with you guys. I mean, the more I see this crazy, diabolical conference realignment, it's like, man, the more times you can just play somebody and maybe take a bus ride or at least a short flight, just do it. I mean, fans love it. It makes more sense for the athletes. Just, you know, just do it. Sometimes we overthink this thing, I think.
What's the reaction up there to the Sun Belt? You guys have been in the MAC. You've been in conference with USA. Now you're in the Sun Belt. What's the reaction, do you think, amongst, you know, how does it compare in terms of the fans to conference USA or the MAC?
I think, without a doubt, I think I'm speaking for the fans, that it's a much better fit geographically. I think Marshall kind of considers themselves a southern school, even though it's the northernmost school in the Sun Belt. But, you know, you have teams that Marshall knows about, Appalachian State and Southern Miss and Old Dominion and all these teams that you can kind of get to, James Madison, they used to play in the FCS days. So everybody can relate. And I know this, just because Conference USA had some good teams, but my God, you're going out to El Paso, you're going out to Houston. I mean, it just didn't raise any excitement in terms of rivals. So the fact that they're down there playing, and to be honest, the Sun Belt takes its football seriously. You guys know that. And I think it's been a win-win throughout the whole league for them. And I think that that's the reason they tried to get out as quickly as they did, because they realized, hey, this is going to jumpstart people's excitement again. And it's already created some good natural rivalries, even with schools that they haven't played before.
Well, hopefully we can get most definitely a series beyond like we talked about for you guys. And I'm looking forward to it. Excitement is definitely when we got – I heard people at the Big House talking about even, you know, which is cool. You know, here we are in a great environment, but I overheard people talking about how much they were looking forward to Marshall coming to Greenville because of the, we talked about, it's not really a rivalry, but it's a special game.
Yeah.
So that made me feel good to hear people talk good about the game. And
I think it is a rivalry, Dave. I think you can have a respect rivalry without it being a hate rivalry. And I do think it's a rivalry. I want to beat Marshall just as bad as I want to beat NC State. I just don't hate them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's different.
Even the guys that I talked to, I was telling you about from the 70 team, they say, you know, except for when we play Marshall, he goes, we're Marshall fans every Saturday. So, I mean, that's just – it's cool to hear. And, again, the commitment to putting that tribute up in the stadium. It's just – there's so many things that are good about the game. It'd be great to keep it going for sure.
I agree. It needs to keep going. And from an East Carolina standpoint, and you guys are in the same conference with them, but – we don't have the tie with something like the plane crash. We have a very similar relationship with Southern Mississippi. And East Carolina needs to get those guys back on the schedule.
And there's times like what we talk about with, not to get it on tangent, but there's times like what Kyle's talking about where, and you, I know you alluded to earlier, Keith, with we can't play teams every single year like a Marshall or Southern Miss, but they should be sporadically, you know, put on the schedule every 2 or 3 years. We should be going to either place.
Yeah, I agree, because, you know, fans don't even sometimes think ahead, and they might look at the future schedules and see 26, oh, East Carolina's coming to Huntington, or Marshall's going to ECU. That's a great game. And I haven't heard one person say, why play this game? And you hear that a lot from fans, right? But, no, I think universally, at least from this side of the rivalry, it's people welcome it, and they respect the program. And, you know, what can you say more about a college football game than the fans respect each other and love the game?
No, 100% is the way college sports should be, and regional.
Yeah.
Early on in this conversation, you and Kyle referenced Rasheen Ali, the 6 foot, 210-pound, tremendous running back, and Mike Houston just raved over him today, just saying, he said, I know some folks won't believe this, but, you know, obviously East Carolina saw tremendous running backs in week one at Michigan with Edwards and Corum. But Rasheen Ali is right there, perhaps even better in Coach Houston's opinion. And, 18 for 137 and two touchdowns against Albany. Tell us more about Rasheen Ali, and then also a couple of the other skill pieces. And you had Chuck Montgomery, receiver, 5'10", 190, six catches for, 80 or 85 yards. And then big tight end, Cade Conley, 6'4", 240 pounds, out of Michigan, seven catches for right at 80 yards.
Yeah, but those guys are – all three of them were huge factors in, that second half where they finally – put it together. Ali's got a great story. His dad was an avid boxer, and Rasheen grew up as a boxer. And he said it taught him a lot about footwork and being on your own with just you, mano a mano, if you will. And then he played sparingly in high school, which is why he didn't get a lot of offers. He was out of Cleveland area. And when he got to Huntington, Doug Chapman, who was a former NFL running back, played at Marshall with Chad Pennington back in the day. He said, watch number 22. This guy's going to be a star. And so his freshman year, redshirt freshman year, he runs for 1,400 yards, 23 touchdowns. And then last year in preseason camp, he gets hurt, and everybody just goes, oh, goodness, what's going to happen? And Marshall had a really good running back in his stead with Kalen Laybourne, who was in camp with the 49ers. He got cut, but he still ran for 1,500 yards. So obviously they didn't have much drop-off. But for Ali now, he's been much more mature in camp. Coach Huff has raved about him. He said, it's so much easier now to run without this brace. And he's a big-time talent. Maurice Clarett, former Ohio State running back, tweeted about him the other day saying, watch this guy. He's as good as a running back as there is in college football. So he's got a lot of talent. The Montgomery kid you mentioned, real slippery. He's got speed, and he's a big personality for that team. And that tight end was sort of an unknown guy. He was they have, I think, nine tight ends in their room, but he was like the second-string guy. Their starter had gotten hurt. And he came out of nowhere, but he transferred from Central Michigan. Big kid, 6'4", 260. And like you said, he was a big part of them moving the football because they were having trouble throwing it. And he's a big target. So you're right on with those three guys really kind of providing the push to help them get that win on Saturday.
No doubt. And we also had a comment from our friend B. Pace in the media. And he says, I grew up in Beckley, West Virginia. My dad grew up listening to your dad. Brown was my neighbor in Beckley.
Wow, Brian, thanks for saying that. That's where Dad started, and then we moved up here in 68, and then he took the job at Marshall, and then and of course in 70 the plane crash. But he loved Beckley, considered Beckley his home away from home. He's from Newark, New Jersey originally, and Tink Brown was a heck of a basketball player at Marshall, so got a lot of love for Beckley. I was born there, so thanks for saying that, and really nice to know, and thanks for listening and pointing that out.
How far is a geography question? How far is Beckley from Huntington?
Only like an hour and 45, right down 77, so it's an easy drive, yeah.
All right, not at all, okay. Well, we're looking forward to it, Keith. I'll tell you what, I appreciate your time. As always, you've been great to us over the years, and hard to believe we've been doing this for over 5 years now.
Yeah.
Every single time. How can people follow your work? And I know up on the screen we have, I'm trying to get used to saying X or Twitter, at Keith Morehouse. How can people get in touch with you as far as your work?
Well, they can do that, or they could just email me. It's keith.morehouse@wsaz.com. And wsaz.com is our website. So we put our stuff up there, and we'll have our East Carolina stuff up there through the week. And we'll send some down to our friends at WITN, which is also a great station. So we have a great relationship with them. And so thanks you guys for having me, Dave and Bubba and Matt and Kyle. I really appreciate all you do and the kind words you have to say about the Thundering Herd. And I'm looking forward to Saturday and hopefully seeing you guys down there.
I hope too, in the press box. Maybe one day we can get Kyle up there where you can actually meet him. So
I'd
love to meet you, Keith, but I will not be at the press box.
Well, I'll meet you on the tailgate lot somewhere. I told Patrick I was going to do something with him or say hi to him before the game. So I'll see if I can find you guys.
All right. Take care, man. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Keith. Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye. I appreciate Keith a lot. He's been great to us. In fact, in the COVID year, you remember, guys, when that's how, where the idea for Bubba had for the Inside Slant came about. And, man, Keith was with us for about every single week of when we first started that show 3 years ago, really out of necessity because we had no football to talk about.
Marshall was one of the hottest stories in football in 2020.
Yep.
As they started the season off, you know, there was even, you know, because of the conferences that weren't playing, there was some early scuttlebutt about could Marshall be a playoff team. And their season kind of – they had a good season, but it kind of tailed off in the second half of it. But, yeah, I remember that well. And Keith is great, man. I mean, it just goes – perfect with him representing Marshall. That is, you know, even though he doesn't work directly for Marshall, he works for a television station there in Huntington. It's cool to have. That's the kind of dude that, you know, if you're an East Carolina fan, you expect to run into from Marshall. He's just a good dude.
No doubt. Glad to have him on. In fact, he'll be with us. Well, he'll be there at the game. They told us at 2:30 on Saturday. So they're driving down on early on Saturday morning. So you can find Keith around the stadium for sure. Guys, we had a comment from, was that Thick Poppy?
We did. He was talking about the crowd this Saturday for the Marshall game. I'm just saying, he said, go Pirates. Hey, fellas, what are your attendance projections for this game? That he's thinking around 45,000. I had not heard, I think, Dave, you responded to him saying that you had heard something about 43. That would be great. And, you know, Coach Houston kind of challenging Pirate Nation today at his weekly press conference saying, hey, this is the home opener. You know, we have an excellent football team, excellent regional opponent in Marshall. No reason we shouldn't have a full stadium. My guess would be, I was thinking, you know, 41, 42,000, somewhere in there. If we get to 45 or more, great.
Yeah, I'm with you, Bubba. I think it'll be 42, 43. Maybe as many as 45 if the weather's good. There's a 40% to a 50% chance of rain. If that goes down or, you know, goes away altogether, if it doesn't go up, I think we'll get over 40. If that rain chance hangs around or goes up, then I think it'll be somewhere in the 30s. But you know what? Unless it's a freaking monsoon, it's going to be warm, guys. A little bit of rain will feel good. Just come to the game. Wear a poncho and enjoy the game.
Makes no doubt.
Yeah. Anything under 43 would, for me, be a disappointment personally.
Yeah. And that's another thing, by the way, guys.
No doubt.
Is that Mike Houston, Bubba?
It wasn't intended to be, but yes, it could. We've said it enough jokingly, but yes, I guess it kind of was that.
Yeah. No, I will say this, and I don't mean I want this or think it's okay, but I do really. If it's going to rain, we won't crack 40,000. I would be shocked, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we're going to have to do. People keep talking about conference realignment and all the different, you know, the big conferences they want to be in. Well, it's kind of hard to be in a big conference if you can't sell at your stadium or get anywhere.
Really? It is?
Well, for, yeah.
Sure as hell didn't hurt SMU or?
Yeah, I know by SMU, but. What I'm saying is we need to have every.
Yeah, it's one of our strengths. We can't make our media market bigger.
Yep. So we need
How
more
about
people.
Those friggin' Pirates? How about those?
Mike Houston with a cameo tonight. Thanks, Coach.
Either that or Bubba has Tourette's.
Oh my gosh! And here's a question from Elliot. He's asking, hey, Dave, what happened to Marty on the sidelines? I listened to the game Saturday, didn't hear him. Did he leave ECU? Thanks. Marty Fuhrer, for many, many years, was a sideline reporter. He and Jeff Charles were extremely close. And my guess, I don't know this 100%, but losing Jeff was a really big deal, obviously, to a lot of us. And I think it was his choice not to come back. I don't think that he was not invited back. I think he just decided to stop after Jeff was gone, and especially the way that everything went down in February. So I don't know that 100%, but just knowing, trying to put, connect the dots from that situation, my gut feeling is he decided not to come back because of that. So
maybe we'll try to get Marty on the show and he can talk about it.
Yeah, that would be good.
Hey, speaking of Jeff, Bob, hold on 1 second, this is related. I went to UBE today, and they got the Jeff Charles bobblehead still. They're $5 now. They're by the register in the middle, I would call the middle of the store, where the hats and a lot of the men's apparel are, the second floor, if you will. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense to anybody. And they have the Jeff Charles bobbleheads there for $5 now, with 100% of the proceeds going
Is it a scholarship?
No, mistletoe.
Mistletoe.
I can't think of the name of the charity, but it's for the mistletoe therapy stuff, whatever the name of that charity is. So they're available. I don't know if it's available again or if they're still available, but they had them up by the register for $5. 100% of the proceeds going to mistletoe therapy research. And I picked one up, and being a colon cancer survivor like Jeff, and I would advise everybody else, go buy them out. They're $5 now. Go buy every one of them.
And B. Pace was asking about the radio broadcast. I had a chance to listen to it, and Soki did a great job as play-by-play, and he did a great. And obviously, we had Andrew Bays on last night for the Pirate Football playback. He was awesome. David Horn's great. Those guys. It was the great thing about that broadcast was the fact that it's, you know, you're moving past, and you never replace a legend. Like Jeff Charles, but it was very seamless. The product was great. The overall production, of course, when you have our good friend David Horn, friend of the show, when he's doing anything, it's going to be top notch. So it wasn't like that, you know, you go from Jeff Charles, this great broadcast, to where the production's bad, everything is bad. It was good. So it's good. I will say this, it was good as it's going to be, because we all love Jeff, and it's not going to be the same. So we have to get used to having another voice call the football games and basketball, for that matter.
Yeah. Elaborating a little bit more on that, Macy O'Donnell, former East Carolina running back and receiver, you know, walk on from the eastern part of the state. Macy, you know, opted to go ahead and begin his career in media. He's doing an excellent job with Hoist the Colors, and then also as part of the ECU Sports Network team as the sideline reporter, and also kind of elaborating on what B. Pace is asking. He said, how was the radio broadcast? Any clips? If you have not heard the broadcast, you can go back and listen to it as Dave did. I'm assuming I did this yesterday. I listened to a few possessions just to get a feel for things, and that was the IBX Media app. And then once you download the IBX Media app, you'll see your options, 94.3, all their various stations, and then also the ECU Sports Network. Click on the ECU Sports Network, and then you can click on the different sports, be it football, men's basketball, et cetera. And it, very easy to find, and I listened to some of the pregame show, and like I said, the first half of the first quarter, and I liked what I heard.
Yeah. I haven't listened to it at all. Stevie is Wednesday night joined us for just another sports podcast with me and Stevie. We're going to have Andrew Bodenheimer and Hunter Gallimore on. But anyway, Stevie was working during the Michigan game, wasn't able to watch it until later. So he was listening. There you go. There we are right there. So he was listening to the broadcast, and he thought they did an excellent job. So far, everybody's giving positive feedback to Zoki. So it'll be interesting to see after the season if everybody continues to like him. I don't know how interested he is in moving to the eastern part of the state, but those conversations might have to be had.
Yeah, I don't think that's cool. Guys, I will say this. I've thought about it a lot. I don't think he's going to move. He's going to stay with the Panthers I will say this too. We know for a fact that things are very bad at the Panthers internally. So it may be a situation. I'm not talking about with Zoki. I'm just talking about with the owner.
And well, he may fall in love with Pirate Athletic.
Yeah, he likes Greenville. He likes ECU. So, but I could also see where he either does what Kyle is talking about, coming here as the voice, or doing like he's doing, just do football only, and having Scott Rogers do basketball and baseball, but we'll, who knows, but definitely kudos to Jim Zocchi. I knew he was going to do a good job, but you still have to hear the broadcast, and I'm glad that part of things have kind of been settled.
Yeah.
Kind of getting back to the game. Sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
I was going to say that, you know, it, after this season, if he doesn't want to do it full time, we need that face. We need a permanent kind of fixture, a new, a new voice of the Pirates, even though there'll never be another voice of the Pirates. But you know what I mean? You need that constant, in my opinion. So if he doesn't want to do it full time, then I think we move on to somebody else.
And we have someone that we haven't even mentioned on the show that wants the job. So
Bubba.
Bubba does, yeah.
No. So I wish I was talented enough to be able to do play-by-play. I think I could handle the color analyst side of things, certainly not play-by-play. But a few more comments on YouTube. Elliot Jameson said, as far as some of the shirts that they were doing to raise money for the scholarship at the ECU School of Communications, he said, do they have any of those available from the Pirate Radio kickoff party, is what he's referencing. I do not know if they do. You know, I've just called 252, 317-1250. I believe that's Pirate Radio's number. And just search their number and give them a call. And then also Robert Dedrick said, are we expecting a low-scoring defensive game? The over-under for the game in Vegas, 44.5. So,
yeah.
So I think we're all at a consensus that we think it will be, you know, a 21-17, 24-20 type of game.
Which not means so it'll fast, be 45-42.
I'm a little
correction.
Different.
I did not mean to speak for Mr. Semenza. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you, B. Rosen. I'm a little different on this one. I think, you know, this is just one theory that I have. You saw two offenses last week that underperformed. You know, we know we have talent at East Carolina. Things obviously didn't come together up in Michigan like we had hoped for. I think watching Marshall, they picked up their offense in the second half. That's more who they are. And they were still vanilla. You know, they were holding back. So I think you have two teams that have a lot more to offer offensively. And I think you're going to see some points. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this thing went over. So just another way to look at this.
All right, by the way, I've got a breaking news, it looks like, guys, that B. Pays is coming out of retirement. He was the voice of the Lady Pirates, which I remember very well, B. Pays, in 95 and 96. So there you go. He's our guy, B. Pays. We would love to have you. Sure. Let's do it. Let him know. Send your resume in, bro. You're right there in Raleigh. You could definitely be the voice of the Pirates and the beat 95.3 in Raleigh, doing very well there. So check him out there. And I know, by the way, B. Pays, that maybe you can hook all of us up to go to see that. I know that LL Cool J show is coming up here pretty soon. I was a big fan back in the day. That gives me memories of junior high and high school. But I heard
that, going back to Cali.
Yeah, I heard that those tickets, surprisingly, are $200, $250 bucks, some of those seats. I'm sure you get cheaper.
Mama said knock you out, Dave.
There you go.
And I'm out of LL Cool J songs.
There you go. But anyway, one of my all-time favorite hip-hop artists is LL Cool J. So anyway, that will be a lot of fun.
No, didn't he? Wait a minute. I'm forgetting one more. Didn't he have something? B. Pays, help me out here. What am I thinking about? An early LL Cool J song about the radio or the boombox? It was something about...
Raisin Bells. That album.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the song. But Pays should know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, maybe he can help us out here.
Yeah, that's his expertise. So if he still listens, that'll pop up on the screen in a minute.
All right, how about this? JR and Bubba are the best because they help us with stats. For what it's worth, Michigan's last 10 opponents are 10-0. And after the week after playing the Wolverines, he just did the research. How about that?
Wow, that is interesting. Let's hope that continues.
And man, Johnny comes up with some great stats. You know, you got to give Johnny props. He comes up with some great stats like this all the time.
The Pays just answered my question. There it is.
Can't live without my radio.
That's it. Yes. Yes. I could not think of that song. That
was LL another Cool J. One LL from Cool the 80s. J. is one of the all-time greats. I mean, he has so many songs that you forget that, you know, LL did. So that's how.
And of course, don't forget his classic with Brad Paisley, Accidentally Racist.
Oh, yeah.
And LL had a nice acting performance in Halloween H2O as the security guard, if you guys remember.
Hey, what
where was we thought he got killed there, but then he turns out at the end he's still alive. You guys, Kyle, you're a Halloween fan. You remember that.
Which movie did you say?
Halloween H2O. LL Cool J was the security guard.
You know, it's been so long since I've seen H2O. My favorite of the Halloween series, I love the Jamie Lloyd trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, as you would imagine, but Matt, the Jamie Lloyd trilogy.
You do, buddy.
Do what?
And I know why.
Well, that sounds kind of creepy out of context there, but keep in mind I was her age at that time. But I those are my three favorites, and so I've seen H2O. Obviously, really thought the sequel to H2O was horrible and a disgrace because the ending to H2O was really well done, and then they just totally and whatever the one was after that with Busta Rhymes, which was god awful. They just totally acted like the ending to H2O. They cut off the wrong person's head instead of Michael Myers. It was so stupid.
Yeah, it was a horrible ending. And just to put some context to that, guys, my joke about Jamie Lloyd, she's grown up to be a very pretty woman. So,
indeed.
You know, so we're talking about the current version.
Yeah, please. I'm glad you elaborated on that. Hey, by the way,
her real name is oh God, my brain's not working
Danielle
again.
Danielle Harris.
Thank you. Yeah, Danielle Harris. And she grew up to be a knockout.
By the way, I want to mention real quick, Bubba, we'll get back to football, I promise. The LL Cool J song I could not think of is it was kind of like a ballad, I Need Love. I don't know if y'all remember that from the late 80s.
I Need Love, y'all. Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead, Bub. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have Elliot Jameson and Robert Dedrick asking regarding the quarterback situation if we had shared our thoughts on that with Mason Garcia and Alex Flynn. And you guys did that a bit a night ago on the Pirate Football Playback. And definitely go back and check that out to Elliot and Robert if you have not. But we'll discuss it more right now. You know, I was not taking part last night, had some stuff going on after getting back from Ann Arbor. But, you know, my thoughts, very much like Coach Houston in his weekly press conference, you know, both did some good things, both struggled at times. It was kind of in reverse. Mason struggled out of the gates. Then Alex came on, looked very comfortable and very much in control of what he was doing. And then Mason came on in the second half after Alex struggled some in the third quarter. But to each of their points, yes, we were fairly vanilla, as was Marshall. You know, whether it's new personnel, be it at the quarterback position or otherwise, then also in Marshall's case, perhaps, you know, not trying to show any more than they had to before playing East Carolina. But as far as the Pirates are concerned, you know, I think after what I saw and then also hearing what Coach Houston said and Coach Donnie Kirkpatrick on the Brian Bailey show yesterday, they were backing up what I was seeing as far as, you know, we run a lot of RPOs. Mason Garcia and Alex, especially Mason, is what DK referenced, and that is just that, you know, they were understandably not wanting to make that big mistake. So as a coach, you know, you tell them to err on the side of caution, and that means handing the ball off. So sometimes instead of handing the ball off, they should have been pulling it and throwing the football. And even so, you know, I think we ended up throwing 29 passes and we had maybe 26 rushes, and out of those 26, 27, however many rushes we had, I want to say 13 were by the quarterbacks, 8 by Mason, and then 5 by Alex. So so we weren't quite as conservative as the, you know, the average fan may have thought just because they were handing the ball off when they could have pulled it and thrown it.
Let me ask you everybody a question here. You're going to play them both against Marshall, most likely. You started Mason against Michigan. Flynn came off the bench, maybe had a chance to watch some things. With the dynamic of a player as Mason is, if you start Flynn with the idea that you tell Mason you're going to go in third series, whatever, and you let him sit there and watch a couple series, and he gets to see some things, and he comes in off the bench, maybe all juiced up now because maybe he feels a little bit like even though he split time, he didn't get the start. Would you do that maybe this game and see how it worked with Mason coming off the bench, or would you go ahead and start him and then rotate Flynn in, or does it matter?
I personally think it's harder to come off the bench. I really do. I mean, that's my feeling on it. I like to be on the field at the start of the game. You know, I just think you get into a better rhythm, and, you know, that's my feeling on it. But, you know, maybe Mason's the opposite. I mean, maybe he can benefit from, you know, kind of taking that back seat and watching a few series and then coming in. But I'll say this, Kyle, one thing I would do regardless whether he starts or he doesn't start, I would call the game to his strengths and utilize that strong arm of his, pump the ball downfield, pump the ball horizontally to wide receiver screens, and try to get him in a good rhythm either way.
Yeah, I was going to say that my thing is, my take on it would be that I think that it was a lot of nerves, your first game truly as a starter, and you start, no excuses, you start in the Big House. But I'm going to be curious to see, guys. My curiosity would be, you know, Matt, you talk about it all the time, and I know Bubba would say the same thing. You improve the most probably game from game one to game two, but the first to second week. But I'm curious to see, how does Mason Garcia react to what I would argue is more of an even game versus a game that you know that you're a huge underdog in? That's my thing. And it's your first home game, so it's not the intimidation of playing in the Big House or on the road.
Bobby, you are a quarterback. Do you think there can be any benefit from sitting and watching a couple series and coming off the bench versus starting, or are you in the boat with Matt where you'd rather be starting no matter what?
There's certainly no substitute for getting out there and actually executing the offense, but at the same time, there definitely is a benefit to it because that was something that the Coach Logan did pretty frequently. He would have, be it the David Garrard and Bobby Weaver situation in 98 when David Garrard was a redshirt freshman, or the situation, you know, where – you know, you bring Danny Gonzalez in for a series here and there to allow Marcus Crandall to see it from the sideline. Or, you know, he would do the same thing with Richard Alston and David Garrard. So I definitely think there's some benefit to it. I mean, you know, whether it's allowing the starter to see it from a different perspective, or because that backup, the number two, brings something else to the table, much like the case was with Rob Cass and Patrick Pinckney. And you referenced a good recall on your part yesterday, Kyle, as far as that, you know, that system was mainly used between Pinckney and Cass in 2007, okay. But in 2008, when Patrick Pinckney was not performing well at all in a home game, what ended up being a 30-10 win against Memphis, the Pirates may not even win that game, much less by three touchdowns, had it not been for Rob Cass coming off the bench and having the hot hand.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. You can win with a two-quarterback system. We did it in 07 and a little bit in 08. And, you know, and back, you mentioned Bobby Weaver and David Garrard. Before Bobby got hurt and we were using that two-quarterback system, we were 5-1. So if done correctly, we'll even go more recently. 2015, if people would have left Ruffin alone and quit bugging him about starting James Summers, and they would have just kept starting Blake Kemp and bringing Summers in off the bench, I think Ruffin doesn't get fired at the end of that year.
Amen.
Despite what old shithead wanted.
I didn't want summertime, but that's.
I didn't mind summertime. You know, when it was the right time. You know, one of the smartest calls I ever heard from the fifth quarter was by an old man from Virginia. I don't remember his name. It was during that whole situation, and people were calling in saying, They better start James Summers next week. This was after the SMU game when he came in off the bench and brought us back. And, you know, Virginia Tech and SMU. And an old man called in and said, I wouldn't start James Summers. And Clip or whoever asked him why. And he said, because we're 2-0 starting Blake Kemp with James Summers coming in off the bench. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, I think people overthink things a lot.
Something else of note in today's weekly press conference, Mike Houston, I thought of this because of a comment that was made, you know, from Brad Williams. And he was talking about running the ball. We didn't run the ball all that much, and we didn't have very much success. That 4 yards or, you know, right at 4 yards per carry, I want to say it maybe was upper threes, but that was a little misleading. You had a nice run or two by Garcia and Alex Flynn, and then you had that 16-yarder by Rajay Harris where he really delivered a blow on the sideline at the end of that run. But, you know, by and large, the Pirates had very little success running the football. But with that being said, you know, really really like what Javius Bond brought to the table, 4 carries for 16 yards, 3 catches for 31 yards. And Mike Houston in today's weekly press conference said that he gave and actually now that I think about it, this may have been on the Inside EC Athletics show, but on one of those, he said that we got to get him being Javius Bond, the ball more. That has been the directive from him to Donnie Kirkpatrick and the offensive staff this week.
No question about it. Those guys have been we had Marlon Gunn last year, and then when Javius Bond – we've been hearing in the fall camp, guys, that about Bond. Was it Patterson for the wide receiver? We heard a lot of good things about him, but – Bond is one that we heard a lot at running back and a true freshman. So,
and it was incredible about Bond. If you in the running back room, there is depth where receiver room, not so much. You got Rajay Harris, you've got Marlon Gunn, you've got Green, who transferred here from Georgia Southern with a lot of success down there. And Bond, you know, I'd have to look, but I believe he got the second most playing time at running back after Harris this past week.
That's correct.
So if he's doing that already against Michigan as a true freshman, how good is this kid going to be? I mean, it's
that's what I was thinking.
You know, I you don't want to overhype somebody too soon, but man, I can't wait to see how he develops over the next year or two.
And one of the things that I like is the way we got the ball in his hands in a variety of ways. Pace said run the sweep with Bond, you know. We lined him up in the backfield and handed it off to him, but then also, you know, lined him up in the slot, threw it to him, motioned him across, it seems like, or at least handed it to him on a jet sweep, and then lined him up in the backfield and threw a swing pass to him, screen pass. So hopefully we'll continue to do that. And, you know, by Coach Houston's comments, that will certainly be the case. After 7 touches last week, I'll set the what do you think? I'll set the over-under this week for the number of touches, both in the run game and the receiving game, pass game, to, maybe 13.5, 14.5?
We got to figure out a way. You know, I wish we had more depth at receiver, but we got – he's a playmaker. Gunn's a playmaker. Harris is a playmaker. You've seen Green make plays at Georgia Southern. So I don't know what to set the over-under at, how many times he's going to touch the ball, but he's got to touch it more. But then you still got Marlon Gunn Jr. who can make plays. And like I said, did Green even play against Michigan?
He did. I think both of these came late in the game, perhaps on that final drive when the Pirates kicked the 33-yard field goal. But looking at the box score after the game, he did have – 2 receptions and did Gerald Green, the Georgia Southern transfer.
Okay, so that's good. So we got 3 running backs, and I'm not sure how good Gunn is at catching the ball. I don't remember, but we know Rajay Harris is pretty good catching the ball at the backfield. Bond is, we know that, and apparently Green is also. So that's interesting. You may see a lot of passing to the running backs this year, which I actually am a big fan of.
Yeah, as am I. So Kyle, as you take a look at this game, you know, really, were there anything else that that you had to say about this matchup between the Pirates and Thunder and Herd before we wrap this up?
No. You know, I thought Marshall was going to be really good before the season started. They did not look it against Albany. I don't know how much was that was them being vanilla or overlooking Albany, or if they're not as good as I thought they were going to be. My guess is going to fall somewhere in between. They ain't quite as good as I thought they were going to be, but ain't nowhere near as bad as they were against Albany. So I think it'll be a tough matchup. Nothing would surprise me in this game. Honestly, this is a game that I think could come down to the wire. My predictions go to overtime. The Pirates win it in overtime. But nothing would really surprise me, honestly. It wouldn't surprise me if they beat us by a couple of touchdowns. It wouldn't surprise me if we beat them by a couple of touchdowns. But my gut tells me it's going to be a close game. It's going to come down to a wire, to the wire. And whoever makes plays and doesn't make – whoever makes the most plays and makes the least mistakes is going to come away with the victory.
Before we wrap it up, let's promote some of our upcoming content as well as some of our historical content. Kyle, tell folks what you and Stevie Fly have headed their way on tomorrow night on Just Another Sports Podcast.
Yeah, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, join me and Stevie for Just Another Sports Podcast. We're going to have on Andrew Bodenheimer, Bodie, who played multiple games against Marshall, two overtime games against him in 2011 and 2012. So we'll talk about his memories of playing the Thunder and Herd, and we'll also have former ECU wide receiver Hunter Gallimore on to talk about his career at East Carolina. So join me and Stevie tomorrow night for Just Another Sports Podcast as we talk East Carolina Marshall, we talk East Carolina wide receivers, and just talk college football week two as a whole.
Taking a look at some of our other programming last night, we had an edition of Absolute Empowerment, tremendous conversation with Jeff Connors and T-Cop, Terrence Copper, former Pirate wide receiver, who also went on to a nice career in the NFL with the Chiefs, Saints, and I think other teams. But definitely go back and check that out. Of course, now you're watching the Pirate Preview. Tomorrow, in addition to Just Another Sports Podcast, we'll have Sonny and Semenza with their Week 2 picks. On Thursday, we'll have the Inside Slant. On Friday, A Pirate's Life for Me with John McMillan. We were going to bring that to you a week ago, but just with traveling to Michigan, was not able to upload that in time. So we have that for you this week, about a 85-minute conversation with John McMillan, you know, who graduated from East Carolina back in the early to mid-70s and has seen more than 40 years of Pirate football and really went to every game for about a 10 to 12 year stretch there during the Steve Logan tenure. Got to know Coach Logan and his parents pretty well. Sights and sounds, and we'll have sights and sounds from around Dowdy Ficklin Stadium for the Marshall game, of course, but we also have sights and sounds from Ann Arbor, from around Michigan Stadium. Go back and check that out. And then Sunday night, we'll have the Pirate football playback as we talk about what has taken place between the Pirates and Thunder and Herd on Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock kickoff on ESPNU.
And by the way, guys, a couple programming notes close to home for me. Obviously, tomorrow night we have a big show here on the Sports Objective, not sports related. Also, 6 to 8 is we're working really hard to get our hospital back open. So we'll make sure that you tune in for that. Or if you know anybody that lives in the Williamston, Martin County area, let them know about that for sure. And then Friday night football, we have Martin County football hosting Southside, the Chocowinity area folks. So looking forward to that. Our very own Charles Smith and legendary North Carolina High School Athletic Association Hall of Famer and ECU coach as well. And that will be Harold Robinson. We'll be having the call starting at 6:40 on Friday night, and you can watch that game on Facebook or YouTube. And don't forget, as always, for everything, to subscribe to our YouTube channel. So very busy fall, guys. Appreciate you guys very much. Bubba, thank you. And by the way, the new shows we have this year have been excellent. So make sure that you always do that for us. Justin.
Yeah, Bubba, and also one more programming. Episode 2 of The Coach's Kid is out. We interview Terry Holland's daughter, Kate, and it is out now. You can find it on YouTube and anywhere else you listen to our podcast, and I think it's a fantastic conversation. I particularly enjoyed the middle and the second half of it, so check that out if you haven't listened to it yet.
I'm going to – that's my plan, too. I haven't listened to that particular episode yet, so thank you, Brad.
JR, very, very quickly, he says, nice work, Bubba and Kyle and the coach's son last night.
Bubba, you can take credit for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Kate Holland Baynard, I think she's offended, Johnny. But no, appreciate it. Definitely have gotten that show off to a tremendous start with Tommy Bowden and now Kate Holland Baynard, one of the two daughters of Terry and Ann Holland.
Great stuff, great work, and we've got a lot of great shows, episodes the guys are planning behind the scenes. I know it's going to be fantastic and something you can do, a show that you can do year-round, so great stuff. All right, Brad Williams says Modelo time is near. You go enjoy those Modelos, Brad, and guys, do you have anything?
Yeah, that's kind of an inside joke, Dave, directed to my dad.
Oh, okay. I didn't – I'm learning something here, inside joke there. By the way, we have a tailgate, and we got some great food from Porky's Backyard Barbecue. So stop by and see us on Saturday. Kyle, I hope you can, and Bubba, y'all can stop by. We're going to have wings, barbecue, I think even some sausage dogs, too. I really love their sausage dogs. So stop by and see us. We'd love to have you. We're at near the practice field, towards the Ward Sports Medicine Building, that end of the practice field, if you will. So come by and see us.
Tell them your space.
I believe it's 41 off the top of my head, but it's like I said, it's towards the end of it's the practice field end near the Ward Sports Medicine Building. Closer to that is where our tailgate spot is.
Yeah, but between where the teams dropped off for the Pirate Walk and in Ward.
Yeah, exactly. So that end, it's not the baseball end of with the premium lot. It's closer to Ward. So I believe it's off the top of my head 41, but we'll. Check that out. Guys, I know that we've been going a little bit long, but I appreciate certainly Keith and Matt had to run, unfortunately, but I appreciate Matt. Do you guys, I know, are we going to wait on predictions for the game? We're going to do that on Thursday night?
Yeah, we'll do that on Thursday.
Okay, for the inside slant. All right, just want to double check that. By the way, and Hall of Famer from Pirate Radio, Monica Keefe. Monica, thank you so much. You're a Hall of Famer along with Kyle. Appreciate your insights every week on the – as a matter of fact, I was driving back on listening to the fifth quarter after the game on Saturday, and it was really cool. I told my mom, I said, this is really cool that you can listen to the fifth quarter. We got such a long road ahead of us to get back to home in Williamson, north of Greenville, but it was nice to have the fifth quarter. It made me feel like I was at home, as corny as that may sound, driving – home. It was good company for sure on the road. All right, guys, do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Not a thing. Just ready for Saturday.
Going to be a lot of fun. Get your tickets, 1-800-DIAL-ECU. Let's make Coleman Spain and all the great folks in the ticket office who do I tell Coleman all the time, they have a thankless job. They do an excellent job with tickets. Make sure that you call them. Let's make them work hard, and let's. I would love to have a sellout. I know it's probably not going to be a sellout, but what else are you doing if you're a Pirate fan on Saturday? Come out and support the Pirates. 4 o'clock on ESPNU. And of course, great job again by Jim Zocchi with the Pirate Sports Radio Network, and of course, Kevin Monroe will be back with the home game on Saturday. David Horn and Macy O'Donnell as well. So make sure that you check them out on Saturday. All right, guys, appreciate it very much. We'll be back. The guys have it tomorrow night for Just Another Sports podcast. And, of course, Sonny and Semenza and much more. Keep it right here. You've been watching the Pirate Preview on the Sports Objective and listening as well right here. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates. Everyone, I copy that. Everybody gonna see it's go bananas. Scream loud, but don't hold back.
every truck, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get involved, get the wave going, let the hurricane y'all make.